Portland City Council, come back to order. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman, Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Adams.
Here. Quorum is present, and we shall proceed. Can you please read the title for the 315 Time Certain, a land use matter, item number 736.
Appeal of Cottonwood Capital Property Management, LLC, Frank Fleck and Gary Gossett against hearing officer's decision to approve with conditions the application of Recology Oregon Material Recovery, Inc. for a conditional use to establish a waste-related use that accepts the processes food waste accepts and processes food waste that is blended with yard debris within a fully enclosed building at 6400 Southeast 101st Avenue, LU 10194818 CUAD.
So how many of you have been to a city council meeting before? Okay. Just a couple of rules of the chamber. This chamber does everything we can. The operation of this chamber is geared towards the free flow of diverse points of view. So there's no cheering, hooting, clapping, audible noise. If you like something that somebody says, you can do a thumbs up. And if you don't like what somebody says, you can do a thumbs down. What else? If you are here lobbying on behalf of a for-profit, nonprofit, school, any other organization, if you're here to authorize, if you're authorized to lobby on their behalf, you need to disclose that under local law. If you want to sign up to testify, then you can approach our great council clerk, who can take your name. We call in an order, and the procedure of this particular hearing, given that it's a land use hearing, is ascribed, the process is ascribed by state law, and I'd ask the city attorney to describe for us the kind of hearing we're about to have.
Okay. This is an evidentiary hearing. It means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. We'll begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following staff report, the city council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and have 10 minutes to present their case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. The principal opponent, in this case the applicant, will have 15 minutes to address council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the principal opponent, the applicant, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. That is, they support the application. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the applicant. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before council. There are several guidelines for those who will be testifying or addressing the council today. First, regarding submitting evidence into the record, any letters or documents you wish to become part of this record should be given to the council clerk, who's Carla on the other side, after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the council clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Second, testimony must be directed to approval criteria. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code that you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report. Third, issues must be raised with specificity. You must raise an issue clearly enough to give council and other parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you do not, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Fourth, the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to any conditions of approval. Additionally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court to challenge the conditions of approval. And that concludes those remarks.
So next I will ask members of the City Council if they wish to declare any conflict of interest. It can either be a potential conflict of interest or an actual conflict of interest. Does anyone on council have any conflicts of interest to announce at this time? Hearing none, if no council has a conflict of interest, I'll then ask if any member of council has had any ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of this hearing process. Ex parte contact can include communication between a council member and a party to this quasi-judicial proceeding about the substance of the proceeding that has taken place outside of this proceeding. Any ex parte conflicts or contacts, I should say, that any member of council would like to declare.
I've had multiple emails from both sides and phone calls from both sides.
And I have also, and I think they're all entered into the record.
I have as well, and they're in the book in front of me, and I reviewed them.
I've had emails. I don't think I've had any phone calls.
Okay. All right. Does any other member of the City Council have any matter that needs to be discussed before we begin this hearing?
Mayor, before you do, one of the things you need to do with ex parte contacts is ask if there are any questions from anybody in the audience about those ex parte contacts.
Any challenges from anyone attending this hearing regarding conflicts of interest or ex parte contact declarations? Hearing none, we'll now move on to the hearing. We'll have staff please come forward. Hi, how are you?
Wonderful, thank you.
Good.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Council. I'm Sheila Fregoli, the assigned planner for the Bureau of Development Services. I'm here to present the hearings officer's decision and the appeal issues before you today.
Sheila, could you just move the mic over a little bit?
The applicant, Recology Oregon Waste Material Recovery, is requesting conditional use approval for new waste-related use. The applicant wishes to accept food waste at an existing recycling facility that is located on a large industrial site historically known as the Freeway Land property. The food waste will be delivered to the site primarily by garbage haulers who will collect the food waste from city residences who will dispose of their food waste in their yard debris containers. This will be a new curbside collection service. The applicant anticipates 35 garbage hauler trucks coming to the site daily. Also, mixed food waste will be accepted from private self-haulers as well as the general public. The waste will be offloaded inside an existing building and then sorted. The mixed food and yard debris waste will remain in the building for no more than 48 hours before it is transported via semi-truck to a different site for composting. Also, as part of this application, the applicant is requesting an adjustment to waive the requirement that the waste-related use have access from a major city traffic street or a street that is within a designated freight district. This aerial photo shows the northern portion of the approximate 100-acre site. The green star identifies the building where Recology will accept the mixed food and yard debris material. Recology will operate within a 6.2-acre ground lease area. This industrial site has access from Southeast Foster Road from the Southeast 101st Avenue intersection. The access road crosses through private property over the city-owned Springwater Corridor Trail and onto a private road, which was Southeast 100th Avenue before being vacated. Johnson Creek runs through the northern portion of the site near the Springwater Trail. East of the site, you see the East Lentz Floodplain Restoration Project, a city-owned 80-acre facility that will provide flood storage and natural habitat benefits. This aerial photo shows the southern portion of the site. We see the I-205 interstate to the west and the Mount Scott area to the south of Southeast Knapp Street. The Mount Scott area is primarily developed with single-dwelling residences. There are some institutional uses on the hill, such as a small public park, church sites, and a residential group living treatment facility. There is also a large multi-dwelling residential development located southwest of the site, south of Mount Scott Boulevard. Excuse me. The freeway land site is within the EG2 general employment and the IH heavy industrial base zones. Waste-related uses require conditional use approval in both those zones. The entire site is located within the Johnson Creek Basin Plan District. Portions of the site along Johnson Creek and its southern edge are within the Environmental Conservation and the Environmental Protection Overlay Zones. It is important to note that the Recology facility is not located within the overlay zoned areas. The zoning and development pattern that surrounds the site is primarily residential. Specifically, the area north of the Springwater Corridor is zoned general employment and R2, a low-density multi-dwelling residential zone. To the east is the East Lance Wetland Restoration Project. It is zoned R10 single-dwelling residential and open space. On the south side of Southeast Knapp, the owner of the freeway land site also owns a 6.2-acre vacant site. It is residentially zoned. The lot is steeply sloped, forested, and has a creek running through it, and it is entirely within an environmental overlay zone. Finally, most of the Mount Scott residential area is zoned single-dwelling residential. Concerns have been raised about potential flooding.
Can I ask a question? So how long is... Roughly how long has this residential and industrial zoning been in place?
I couldn't tell you exactly, but at least the last 40 years.
Thank you. Yeah.
Concerns have been raised about potential flooding at or near the Recology facility. This map identifies in light blue Johnson Creek, a designated floodway. The dark blue area is the designated 100-year floodplain, which is labeled the flood hazard area. The red line outlines the Recology building. This map shows that the proposed waste-related use will be outside of the flood hazard area. Again, the Recology facility is within a ground lease area. It is located approximately in the center of the freeway land site. The Recology facility contains a large metal building, a small office, a weight station, an exterior storage and processing area, and a small exterior retail sales area where ground cover materials are displayed. Now I will show a few photos of the site and surrounding area. This is the large building where the blended food waste material will be offloaded for sorting and then stored temporarily. The Recology facility is surrounded by a tall chain link fence. This photo shows again the building and the weight scale. Then looking northward, we see the weight scale, the small portable office structure, and parking for employees and visitors. This shows Recology's exterior yard and wood debris disposal area or processing area. The applicant states that food waste will not be offloaded or stored in this outdoor area. This photo was taken near the southern gate of the facility next to the interior road, which is identified as Southeast 100th Avenue. We see other industrial uses on the site, as well as the southern edge of the site. And then looking north, on the right, we see the tall fence defining the Recology lease area, as well as numerous other industrial buildings located near the interior road. This industrial business is located across from the Recology building. Here's a photo of the segment of Johnson Creek that runs through the site. On the aerial photo, the yellow arrow identifies the location of the bridge over the creek. Again, the green star identifies the location of the Recology building. The creek is located approximately 800 feet from the Recology facility. The green arrow identifies the industrial site's entrance from southeast 101st Avenue. North of the entrance is the Springwater Corridor Trail. You can see the painted pedestrian and bicycle crossing and the stop sign.
So there isn't a traffic light there?
No, there isn't. Not at the trail crossing. Just a stop sign. This shows looking west, part of that Springwater Corridor that passes near the site. Here we see residences that are located northwest of the site. These homes are located west of Southeast 99th and south of Southeast Woodstock Court. The homes are relatively close to the freeway land site, but are at least 1,100 feet from the Recology lease boundary. This photo was taken from Southeast Knapp, which defines the southern edge of the industrial site. The lock gate prohibits access to the site from Knapp Street. The photo shows the elevation change from Southeast Knapp right-of-way and to the industrial activities on the site. The green arrow identifies the approximate location of the Recology building on the industrial site. Near the lock gate, looking east, we see Southeast Knapp. We also see the forested vacant site across from the freeway land property.
So the freeway land, just to get it oriented, freeway land is on the left or the right?
The left-hand side of the photo.
Okay.
Yes. Again, the Mount Scott residential area is located above the site to the south. This photo was taken near the intersection of Southeast Flavelle Court and Southeast 105th. As the crow flies, this location is approximately 800 feet from the Recology facility. The closest residential lot on the hill is located approximately 600 feet from the Recology building. The hearings officer evaluated the proposal with conditional use approval criteria 33.815.202A through I and the adjustment review criteria 33.805.040A through F. The hearings officer considered the staff report and recommendation, written comments that were submitted into the record, and the oral testimony offered at the hearing. The hearings officer determined that with conditions, the conditional use and adjustment approval criteria would be satisfied and therefore the proposal should be approved. Numerous conditions were imposed. The decision requires signs be posted. It requires an aeration system and drainage collection system must be installed to address odor and to keep liquids from escaping the confines of the building. Information with a map and directions is required to guide customers to the Southeast 101st entrance. And if it is ever reestablished, the Recology-related trucks are prohibited from using access from Southeast Knapp Street. To specifically address concerns raised about nuisance impacts, a condition will require the applicant to log complaints and to annually share a copy of the log with the Lentz Neighborhood Association and the East Portland Neighborhood Office. The condition requires that within 24 hours, the applicant must give BDS access to the site to review the log. Lastly, a condition will require the food waste material to be removed from the site within 48 hours. The appellants disagree with the hearings officer's decision. City Council has received a copy of the full appeal statement. In summary, the appellants state the decision is flawed because the application did not provide technical or expert evidence to show that the facility would not create off-site impacts such as odor, attraction of vectors, increased noise, dust, air, and water pollution. Therefore, the potential environmental impacts were not adequately addressed. The appellants state a mitigation plan should have been submitted. They state that the overall public benefit and potential impacts were not correctly considered. They believe that the applicant's submitted traffic study was flawed, and they contend that the applicant should have provided evidence that there is not enough capacity of existing waste transfer stations. Again, this is an aerial photo showing the site and surrounding development. I should note that there are other city staff from the Bureau of Environmental Services, from Portland Transportation, and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability in attendance. We are all available to answer any questions that you may have. This concludes my presentation.
Questions from council?
Thank you. That was a very clear presentation. You said that one of the residences was 1,100 feet from the facility. Is that the closest?
No. One of the residential lots on Mount Scott is within, as the crow flies, within 600 feet of the Recology facility. So the southern residential lots are closer than those on the north side of Springwater Corridor.
Okay. And is there any evidence in the record? Has anybody determined the prevailing winds?
No evidence in the record.
That's a question that I'll have for folks then. And again, clarifying, is the property, this part of the property in the 100-year floodplain?
Part of the ownership is, yes, but not the Recology lease area. But yes, the part of the which is owned by Jameson, yes, that site is within the 100-year floodplain.
But this particular part of the facility is a foot above or more?
I don't know the elevation, but it's outside of the designated floodplain.
Okay. And then the regulations require that odors cannot be detected for more than 15 minutes in a day. Is that considered at one time or cumulatively over the course of the day?
I believe that the zoning code says that you can have modest odor detections, but it has to be continuous. Yes.
For 15 minutes, and it's
or more. Yes.
Is there a mechanism of objectively measuring odor?
Not that I know of.
Okay,
right.
I was wondering about that. And then on the Kittleson traffic impact study, it considered peak times over 2 days. Is this an adequate amount of time for a study of this kind?
If I could, we might ask the transportation representative, Robert Haley, to speak to that.
That'd be very helpful. Thank you. And so my final question for you then is, was County Vector Control notified, and have they commented on the vector issue?
We did not notify them, and we did not receive anything into the record from the County Vector Control Division.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Haley.
Bob Haley with the Bureau of Transportation. And your question was whether or not, because it was a claim made that 2 counts or 2 days of counts was inadequate, and therefore the study was invalid. In speaking with our traffic operations staff, there is no industry standard for the minimum amount of counts. There could be a problem if you took it on one day and it was a Friday or a Monday, because those can be atypical. But this was in the middle of the month on a Tuesday and Thursday, and no holidays and nothing to make you conclude that these weren't typical counts for establishing a base set of traffic data.
So that's pretty normal for what you see in most applications?
Correct.
Thank you.
So you showed us a picture of Southeast Knapp with a fence. So you mentioned were that fence to be removed, no traffic would be allowed, truck traffic. I'm curious, why is that fence there right now, to prevent traffic?
No.
I'm assuming it's a security fence, and that gate may be used for emergency access at times, but it doesn't appear to be used on a regular basis. It's not really paved or graveled back there. And the applicants were never intending to use NAP, so they had no objection to the condition of approval prohibiting them.
So the entrance would be, the entrance to the site would be from Foster
From 101st is the...
Foster to 101st.
You foster to 101st.
That's the only way in there. Okay. Thanks.
All right. We'll now hear our next presenter, which is the appellant. Please come forward. Welcome to the City Council. And if you could just introduce yourselves as you speak, that'll help us keep the record straight.
Great. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, members of the council. My name is Tom Rask. I'm here on behalf of the appellants, along with Mr. Lee Kell to my right, Mr. Dave Saluga from Shaw Environmental, the senior project manager that has helped us review this project, and Marty Sharp, also from our law firm. Today we have the appellants, and I'll point them out to you briefly, Mr. Frank Fleck, who's present, Mr. Gary Gossett, who's present, and Ms. Gigi DuBose and Mr. Steve Clayton of Cottonwood Capital, who are the property managers and owners of an apartment very near this project.
So those are residential home, your residential homeowners, and then representing the investor. Okay.
Just briefly, you're going to hear today in our balance of our time from Mr. Kell, who's going to explain to you and give you a brief history of the garbage industry in Portland, why we have the rules that we have and why Metro can properly service this situation. Then we're going to turn the balance of our time over to Mr. Dave Saluga, who will analyze and explain to you all the issues relating to nuisance and environmental and other concerns as to why this application should be denied. Mr. Kell?
Yes, my name is Lee Kell. And I've been practicing law in Portland a little over 40 years, and a good part of it with the solid waste industry. We've watched the development, worked with the development of this industry from the 70s on up to today. The basic thrust has always been sanitation. I mean, from the time of the containers to the watertight trucks to the sanitary landfills, now to the transfer stations, which have become MRFs, material recovery centers to separate waste. The whole process has been developed in order to keep waste out of the city, almost except for the central, Metro Central, in the Yonge area. All of the transfer stations are outside of the city. As a matter of fact, all of our waste just disappears from this area. It goes up the Columbia River. It goes down to Polk County. It just leaves the area. This project brings the waste back into the city. And not only does it just the waste, but it brings the putrescible waste back into the city to be processed and dealt with. Metro has worked for years to develop the system that we have now. And they, right now, their MRFs and the MRFs of the private MRFs around the area, all of them have the capacity to handle this project. As a matter of fact, they can start it right now. We don't need to open this Recology project over on Foster to handle this kind of waste, to transfer this compostable material to the composting plants. And that briefly is my point. That's all I wanted to say today, and I'd like to turn it over to David.
Hi, my name's Dave Saluga. I'm a senior project manager with Shaw Environmental, a environmental consulting firm here in Portland. And I was asked by the appellants to review the technical and environmental aspects of the application. And the way I like to do that is I like to start, first of all, looking at the process flow and try to gauge a sense of material and waste flow rates through the system. Looking at the application, I found it difficult, or I found significantly insufficient material to make a real simple process flow diagram for this project. And the reason why we're really interested in the process flow portion of this is because liquids management is a big deal for this project. You're dealing with food waste, who by nature is roughly 65-70% water. So the liquids management aspect of this project is very important. The other thing that I wanted to look at was the nuisance mitigation plan. The city requires that a nuisance mitigation plan be put together for three particular impacts, one for offsite potential offsite impacts, another one for litter, and then finally vectors and dust and mud. I looked for a complete nuisance mitigation plan, did not find one. I was particularly interested in the odor and the vector aspect of this project. And again, I did not find a mitigation plan. But going back to the liquids management, I want to talk a little bit about what the application did say. The application did say that they were going to have a leachate collection system, they were going to have a storage tank, a spraying system, and then the potential of off-site disposal. Of course, looking at all that, I wanted to look at it from a purely technical standpoint, look at flow rates and disposal rates. I found none. I didn't even find simple things like tank size or collection system size, pumps, none of the stuff that you would consider relevant in a technical evaluation. In addition, the leachate system is proposed to be subsurface. Now, in our review of the area, the geological outlying area there, we researched both monitoring wells and geotechnical boring information for that area. One of the things that we found in that area was that shallow groundwater is roughly 5 feet. So if you're talking about putting a leachate collection system below ground, there's a definite potential pathway in shallow groundwater for biological pathogens, as well as additional chemicals that could create or could further odor problems for the site. And given the fact that Johnson Creek is in the immediate vicinity there, this could be a real problem if this system leaked underground. Finally, to conclude about leachate, we did not see anything in the operations area that would indicate how leachate is going to be prevented being what is known as called tracked out. This is where there'll be dumping food solids and mixing it and everything, but there'll be liquids in the area. Trucks will run through those liquids. Those liquids will stick to tires. They will be tracked outside the building. We saw nothing in the application that would deal with that. And more importantly, from a stormwater standpoint, you now have this leachate commingling with the stormwater during the rainy season. Talking a little bit about odor, one of the things the application said was that they were going to use biofilters to mitigate odors. And when I looked at the engineering drawings that were provided in the application, there is an indication that there will be 4 biofilters with a fan system. Again, general dimensions of the biofilters, a given depth of material that's going to be used for filter media, but again, the technical detail was missing, like airflow rates, pressure drop. Where was that information to determine how 4 biofilters were decided? So this was very difficult for me to make an assertion of whether or not the system was adequate enough to remove odors when there was not enough technical information given in the original plan. And finally, in the matters of vectors, the applications say that the sanitary conditions will be maintained inside the facility. I don't understand what that means. That doesn't have a technical application to it. It just is sanitary conditions. So, again, I saw nothing specific that would address on how vectors would be controlled, how vectors would be prevented from being brought in by the trucks themselves. I saw nothing in there how mosquitoes and standing water would be abated. I saw nothing in there about how birds and other flying creatures like that would be prevented from coming inside the building. So again, the issue of vectors from a technical standpoint, I found no information that would indicate that anything was being done to control vectors for that particular project. So as a result of my request of the appellants for the technical review, I found the information, that at least from a technical perspective, to be wholly insufficient.
Just to follow up, a couple other matters that we'd like to raise before you all of you today. First, there's been some debate about the number of loads that will actually be coming into this site. The applicants say it'll be 35 truckloads and less than 5% food waste. What the applicants failed to do was even look at the pilot program that was run by the city. What you'll find if you review the pilot program is it's not 3% food waste, it's 6% in a one-month snapshot, 17% in another month snapshot, and 20% in another month snapshot. Now, one breath, you'd say that's excellent effort on behalf of the citizens to utilize a system that we all support. But the flip side of that is to think that this is only going to be a little bit of food waste with a fair amount of yard debris is simply not the case. Our own evidence from the pilot program justifies otherwise. The other major issue is traffic. And with regard to that issue, the 35 loads is simply not realistic. Haulers from the east side of Portland will make their effort to get to this site. When we did our own review, we're looking at 400 trips, not 35. It's just unrealistic to believe that 35 trips is adequate. And in terms of the applicable code with regard to the major street usage versus the additional street usage, the applicants fail to meet the proper test of exceeding or better than standard, which is required to find this variance.
So, Councilor, I'm going to give you an opportunity. We are bound to interpret, as you know, state law in these matters. And our art and craft of interpretation allows for some latitude, but we are bound by state law and the criteria laid out in state law in terms of how we are to make a decision. So I want to give you an opportunity to summarize where you think the three or a short list. This is intended to be a summary, not a soliloquy, but a summary of where you think the applicant, the proposal, is a field of state law, specifically which law?
Well, I guess initially, in terms of applying state law, you have to look at the city code as it's overlaid against state law, and I would really urge you to start there. In our brief, we outline the related waste condition review criteria that the hearings officer was supposed to apply to this file. What you heard from Mr. Saluga is that it was substantially deficient in a number of criteria.
I don't want you to repeat, but I would, because I appreciate your testimony very much, very eloquent, persuasive, but I want to know of what he said you think applies most directly to which local interpretation of state law.
Okay, well, with regard to the resuscitation from Mr. Saluga, I'd point out that there are significant health and safety issues that are need to be considered, the significant detrimental environmental impacts to nearby environmentally sensitive areas such as Johnson Creek and the watershed. They did not address any potential nuisance-related impacts such as the litter and the vectors. Those are required to be considered under the conditional review criteria for waste-related. The proposal does not address any regulatory issues with regard to Chapter 33, 0.254 and its waste-related uses. And probably most importantly in looking at all, you have to balance the public benefits. And in this case, the public benefits do not outweigh detrimental impacts. And those criteria are outlined in our brief, and they apply strictly to the code and state law.
Thank you very much.
Is the report from the pilot project in the record?
I do not believe we attach that as exhibit. Commissioner, would be happy to submit it as additional information. We do refer to it, and I think we obtained, and I will refer to our exhibit list.
If you look at Exhibit I, there's a spreadsheet of the pilot program and the waste generated from that program.
Thank you. I believe that's a summary as compared to the program itself, but correct, we've got the summary attached.
Oh. Check that out, because I'm assuming that your contention is that because it might be up to 20% food scraps rather than 3%, that would have more odor and potential for vector problems.
Absolutely.
Thank you all very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
We'll now move, as described, to the principal opponent. Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. How many people have signed up?
We have 16.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Steve Clayton, Gigi Dubois, and Frank Fleck. And they'll be followed by Deborah Fleck, Kathleen Gossett, and Gary Gossett.
Welcome to the City Council Chambers. We're glad you're here. Again, you just need to give us your first name, no address, no phone number, and if you're an authorized lobbyist on behalf of any organization. Sir.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. Appreciate your time in considering this appeal. My name is Steve Clayton. I'm an associate attorney with Cottonwood Capital Property Management, appellant in this matter, and the manager of Scott Mountain by the Brook Apartments, located about 0.40 miles southwest of the proposed food and yard waste transfer station proposed by Recology. Cottonwood has had an interest in assessing the impact of the proposed use since it came to our attention in late March of this year. In addition to the negative impacts that have already been described, the proposed use would adversely affect the current enjoyment of Scott Mountain Apartments by existing tenants, two, adversely affect marketing of the project potential tenants, and three, it could result in a significant diminution in value for the owners whom we represent. Point number one, introduction of a garbage dump in the vicinity of Scott Mountain by the Brook Apartments would significantly diminish our current residents' enjoyment of the neighborhood. Renters pay a $150 to $250 premium to live within the Mount Scott neighborhood because of the open space, trees, variation, and terraced outlooks of downtown Portland. This neighborhood east of 205 and south of Johnson Creek, including Willamette National Cemetery, Brookside Park, and Leech Botanical Gardens with beautiful views, is a haven for professionals seeking solace and retreat from their workday lives in Portland. Adding a garbage waste transfer station in this vicinity should not be viewed as a compatible use. Two, our ability to continue to collect premium rents would be hampered by the inclusion of a waste station in our area and would equate the project with lower income housing west of 205. Once prospective residents get wind of food waste station next door, it will be difficult to overcome the biases such an association presents. Third, the Scott Mountain owners would experience a significant diminution in value of their investment because of the leasing challenges presented, the increased vacancy, the lowering of rents that would result from proximity to the waste station and the related nuisances of rodents, odor, noise, traffic, and other environmental impacts that have been stated. For those reasons, we ask that you accept our request to deny the proposed use. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hi, welcome.
Hi.
If you could move that mic,
okay. One
of those mics, too, that'd be great.
My name is Gigi Dubois. I'm the manager at Scott Mountain by the Brook Apartments of Cottonwood Capital. And I feel there's this is just a huge mistake. The environment there is so beautiful. It's all greenery. It's located below Lincoln Memorial and the National Willamette National Cemetery, and it's beautiful. Now, my concern is the toxic waste that's going to come through the water shelf, or just directly into the creek, being only a 0.04 from our property, and the river runs through our property. It worries me about when it floods, it'll get in the river, it'll go to everybody's home, not just ours. And it will, right now we have deer and we have red-tailed hawks and many, forest creatures, and they're all at risk. And if you look at some of their other facilities when they were NorCal, and of course they regrouped, changed their name, they were indicted for bribery. And they had many, many violations to the city laws in San Bernardino and were actually forced out as a settlement, $6.6 million settlement, so that part of the settlement was they could not come back to San Bernardino County for 5 years. Well, why would we want to bring a business with such tactics here in our hometown? They've been asked to leave not just California. They have many huge complaints and problems in Nevada. And I just don't feel that it would be good for Portland, the neighborhood, or, you know, the world in general. I mean, Earth. You put it somewhere else outside where, you know, there isn't beautiful trees that have been, you know, grown for years. And there's people in their golden years that have built their life and their houses here. And they're going to put the transfer station there. It's like, you know, there's going to be the vectors, the rodents, the bugs, the stuff coming, you know, flying off the trucks is waste.
How far is it from your investment?
0.40 miles.
How many feet?
I don't know what that equates to, but.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. Sir?
Good afternoon. My name is Frank Fleck. I'm an appellant, and I'm a president of Springwater Trail Preservation Society. First of all, I want to say that in regards to Sheila's staff report about the floodplain, Johnson Creek floodplain, and this property is not in the floodplain, there is a creek coming down Johnson Creek from Mount Scott Boulevard, or Mount Scott, that runs right down to where that gate is that she showed you in the photo, the gate at the south end of the property. That creek has flooded across the street into the property a number of times. I've lived there for 40 years, and there have been a number of times that it has flooded across the street, making the street impassable and flooding into this property.
What's the name of that creek?
It doesn't have a name.
Okay.
But my neighbors and I are concerned about the stench from the rotting food and the meat and the meat waste. That is a huge concern for my neighbors, my family, and my community. It'll negatively impact the livability, lower property values, and deter businesses from Lentz. We're concerned about the odors, the flies, rats, and disease-carrying vermin that pose a real health risk, and there's nothing to recall these plan to protect us. They say that they're going to remove the waste in 24 to 48 hours. Well, I worked for 35 years in management of manufacturing, and manufacturing is simply inputs, there's a process, and there's outputs. But this is not as simple as first in, first out. It's not packaged product that's going to be out in 48 hours. It's not in one door and out the other. Rather, it's bulk garbage, rotten meat, rotten fish, rotten dairy products, and other rotten food, including liquids, some of which sat in cans for a week and more at homes and restaurants, and it'll be hauled to this property. It's solids and liquids that'll be mixed on the floor in the building. The waste mix will be pushed to the push walls and around the buildings, and the part at the walls and around the buildings isn't the part that's going to be out in 48 hours. It's not like they're going to empty the building every 48 hours and wash it down and start over. There's going to be leachate on the floor and in the drains that's going to be there for much longer. Now, I'm surprised and disappointed that Recology did not engage the Lentz Neighborhood Association or the neighborhood and get an agreement. In fact, on June 28th, the Lentz Neighborhood Association voted to oppose the Recology operation based on odor, vectors, traffic, flooding, and Recology's track record and Lentz image. Multnomah County Commissioner Judy Shiprack, District 3, in which Lentz is a part of, opposes the issuance of a permit and wrote a letter stating that please do not approve the Recology permit. There are other viable sites already able to handle this type of waste. Senator Rod Monroe, District 24, also wrote a letter to the council to oppose it. If this was being proposed for Eastmoreland, they'd say no. Pearl District, they'd say no. West Hills, no. Dunthrop, no. Well, in Lentz, we also say no. Judy Shiprat said no. The Lentz Neighborhood Association said no, and Rod Monroe said no. This is a big negative for Lentz livability, property values, business reputation, and image, and the people of Lentz have been working hard to rebuild and reorganize and reimage Lentz. Please do not approve the Recology permit. There are many other viable sites that have already able to handle this product. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Appreciate your testimony. Next three
are Deborah Fleck, Kathleen Gossett, and Gary Gossett, and they'll be followed by Peter Arbuzov, Catherine Sheehan, and Paul Dieter.
Hi, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
Hi, I'm Deborah Fleck. I'm a resident in this neighborhood, and I strongly oppose this at this site. It's going to be a big detriment to our neighborhood and our community. The odor, the noise, the pollution from the garbage trucks is not healthy, and especially it's not healthy for the kids playing in the new Playhaven Park that you just recently built. Metro has viable sites already that can handle this, so I please urge you don't put it at this site, please. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Ma'am?
Yes. My name is Kathleen Gossett, and my family have lived in Lentz since the 1920s. The site that we're discussing used to be a lumber mill that I played walk through as a child and had lumber trucks coming back and forth. So I'm real familiar with the site. I have lived all over the world and in many different states, but I came back and lived and bought a home in Lentz. I appreciate all the work that they've done to try to revitalize the neighborhood, and they're good people. And we don't need this here. I beg of you, please reconsider it, because it'll do just what she says. Does McFarland ring a bell? You know, you can smell their operation clear to 82nd from where they're located. And that's just wood compost and debris. And I know that they're not, that's not, it's done outside. But the stench is unbelievable. And once it gets in there, how do we get it out? You know, we've got to fill out a log sheet, like they say, and try to contact somebody. Let's just avoid the problem and not have it.
Thanks for your testimony.
Thank you.
Sir?
Hello, I'm Gary Gossett, Secretary of the Springwater, whatever, committee and all that stuff. Well, really.
Sounds very important.
Yeah, very important. Basically, yeah, the people who live nearby are scared. Okay. But I don't need to say the same things that everybody else has said. You guys have all been working hard over the years trying to make Portland a better place, more transparent, a place that we can all be proud to live in. Well, the kind of people that we deal with are the companies that we bring in are a big issue, a big part of what our quality of life is going to be. And you've heard about Recology's and NorCal's history and all that. NorCal might have been had problems in the past, and maybe they're better now. But I'm not certain that's true. You know, I always figure, well, I'll give a company another chance. Okay. After the Lentz Neighborhood Association, I went and talked to Mr. Deltre? I can't say his name right. The guy that's running this thing, and many of his staff, because I wanted more information. I wanted to find out what was true, not just what was being proposed or said on one side or the other. And they seemed to be, you know, upright, straight people, and they promised me that they would get back to me with the information showing their side of this whole thing and about a plant that's in Washington State that is using a lot of the same technology that they're proposing to put in this place. Well, that's what I needed to know. Unfortunately, they've never got back to me. And that's telling. It means that you got somebody who is willing to make a promise to you and then not follow up on it. That's why I'm urging you not to let this thing happen here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Next three.
Are Peter Abuzov, Catherine Sheehan, and Paul Dieter. And they'll be followed by Bill Endicott, Joe Papasodero, and Rose Kaze.
Mr. Abuzov. Hi, how are you? Welcome.
I'm good. Thank you very much. Probably I signed it in wrong paper. But anyway, I'm a regular resident of South 61 of 6100 Avenue. It's just a few minutes to walk to that site proposed. So we are going to live in the epicenter of that sewer. and big huge sewer. It is unhuman action in our opinion, because we are family of three, and I would like to ask you to do everything possible to stop this building, because it was 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, we bought this house. It was nice, quiet area, and we were very glad because Spring Water Corridor is very nice, power built. But more and more trucks rumbling and shaking, more and more, and 101 First Avenue is recycling company, but things is going to be worse, much worse. I'm involved in working at schools, and I'm responsible for cleanliness and everything, for kids, for every building. And we know, we very often pass certificates and training about how is the danger this any smell, even human touching, even a couple of blood in the rotten, it's deadly for human. It's people should know more information of what is the danger about this future factory. It's anti-human.
Thank you, sir, very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Ma'am.
Catherine Sheehan, 109th Avenue. I'm uphill and upwind from this proposed facility. I've recently located here from upstate New York, and before I purchased the property, I had my children do some checking on the area, and they frequently ride the Spring Water Trail, have never detected any odors or anything undue coming from the facility that's there already. So that's why I went ahead with purchasing the property, taking it off the foreclosure rolls for Portland. In Rochester, when I would drive home from work, there was a meat processing plant approximately 2 miles or 10,400 feet from Interstate 590. And the smell carried that far from the meat rendering plant. And the smell was, excuse my expression, enough to gag a maggot. So I'm assuming that kind of a smell is going to be emanating from this facility, despite Recology's claims to the contrary. I believe this kind of operation belongs out far away from any urban area, not just the Lentz area, but far away from any urban area. Then my final comment is, with all due respect, I'm wondering if the city's prepared for the influx of requests to grieve their assessments, because if this facility is approved, our values will immediately drop. I personally will get an appraisal of my property before it goes in and after it comes in, and I'm sure that there's going to be an enormous difference. And I would urge all my neighbors to get appraisals too. Thank you for your time.
I have a question. You mentioned that you're upwind. What are the prevailing winds in the area?
I haven't been there long enough to figure it out. I'm sorry. But,
thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Sir, welcome.
Good afternoon. My name's Paul Deere. I live in Lentz neighborhood. I'm a lifelong Oregonian. I'd like to start with words of a former governor. Let's not Californicate Oregon. I don't think we need to go to California to find a company to process our waste, period. Their track record's not good. They're deceitful and not trustworthy. I don't see any reason why we can't find someone in our own backyard if we have to perpetuate this garbage transfer that seems to be, it's going to happen in Portland regardless of whether this one opens or not. We're all aware of that. So why open a festering wound in this land, in this project? We've already been told by the experts that this composting is going to happen, and whether this particular place is open or not. I also live downwind. I know where the wind comes from, and it comes from the east. I live on 86th Avenue. The wind buffets the back of my house on a regular basis. I have lived in Lentz all my adult life, and I see the traffic patterns that they're showing and this back gate that they say that will never be open. It comes with the same adage that the Arabs have. If you don't want the camel in the tent, don't let its nose under it. I appreciate